This is Rick Kirkman, co-creator of the syndicated comic strip Baby Blues, and you're watching Mr. Media.
Today on Mr. Media, I'll talk to Bug Boy and Hero Lass, the stars of the YouTube sensation Shelf Life, now in its fourth whacked out season on the web. Stick around, and please don't divulge the real life identities of Yuri Lowenthal and Tara Platt. So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media interview. The show is brought to you today by Amazon.com, the world's greatest store for everything from books and movies to computers, TVs, and even my favorite soft drink, Pepsi Wild Cherry. Thinking about buying something online from Amazon or just want to do a little window shopping? You can save yourself a lot of money and help support Mr. Media, that's me, by clicking on one of the Amazon ads at MrMedia.com and start your shopping with us. Get yourself the new iPad or Kindle Fire. Feeling a little racy today? Amazon's got what you need to feel exciting and new, as they used to sing on The Love Boat. Remember, start your next shopping trip from the comfort of your own home, car, hotel, or office with Amazon.com at MrMedia.com. That's right, MrMedia.com. And folks, thanks for your support. Mr. Media is recorded live before a studio audience of some truly ridiculous third-rate superheroes, including Spray Tan Man, Betty Crocker's Bitch, Scratchy McItchy, and Trojan Man, in the new media capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida. The best superhero parody of all time? I've got to go with Marvel Comics' 1960s silliness, Not Brand Eck. Stan Lee and his bullpen knew all the stereotypes, archetypes, and tropes better than anyone, having created most of them. And they showed no fear in ridiculing themselves, their competition, and the hippy-dippy era. But each new generation needs its own jokes, and today's bunch of superheroes is no different. So whether you love comic books or just comic book movies, or if you even think that the genre is totally ridiculous, you're bound to fall in love with the crude, wicked humor of Shelf Life, the YouTube series about plastic action figures come to life on a little boy's shelf. It's Toy Story for young people who've graduated from PG-13 rated movies to a very hard R. The series, now in its fourth season of short, brutally funny, yet crude episodes, was created by the husband and wife team of Yuri Lowenthal and Tara Platt, who play Bug Boy and Hero Lass, respectively. Now, in addition to their characters, other off-the-shelf players include Hero Man, Samurai Snake, and my favorite, Black Velvet.
Yes!
If you've been skeptical of the world of TV series created specifically for the web, Shelf Life is a good excuse to indulge your curiosity. It's quite clever and reminds me a lot of NBC's Community, with Tara a lot like Alison Brie's character in terms of her sexuality and knowing a lot more about life than you might think. And Yuri captures the innocence and humor of Danny Pudi's Abed. Catch an episode of the entire series at shelflifetheseries.com. And Tara Platt and Yuri Lowenthal, welcome to Mr. Media.
Thank you.
With an introduction like that, we'll stay all day.
Right.
Wow. And I hate to correct you, Artie, This goes into it, but it's Shelf Life Series is our .com, and Shelf Life The Series is our YouTube channel. So just to send people in the right direction, because it gets confusing. It's confusing to even me.
I was blinded by the whole community thing. I didn't realize for being on that.
I apologize for that, but we'll get that correct.
That's okay.
Well, I better not promise, because I'll probably mess it up again. But
they'll be able to find it.
Yeah, we're fine, folks.
All right. So let's get to the meat of this.
Yeah.
Why do you guys hate superhero action figures so much?
Yeah, exactly. Why are they such torturous little creatures? I think it sort of stems from the idea that Yuri had so many of them growing up as a kid.
I love how she said had, like past tense. Like
he
like
continues
my office
to have.
Filled with
but
them.
But there was a history to the fact that you had so many when you were growing up.
Yeah.
And when we started talking about this idea realistically, when we wanted to move forward and do the web show, It was
the spirit.
There was a good question of, you know, what A, have you done to your action figures, and B, what do you know that others have done to theirs, and how do we explore that? And you can't
Ben Grimm.
You can't honestly do a show like this justice without basically mistreating and misabusing these poor creatures. And so in order to do that, we had to also create characters that you would want to see misabused, because we're just jerks.
right.
So there has to be a fine line, which is one of the reasons it's a comedy show. There has to be a fine line between putting them in situations where they're going to get mistreated and also making sure that they're the type of people / action figures that are sort of deserving of the mistreatment that they get.
Yeah.
So how many characters did you have, Yuri?
or have? I really, hundreds. I mean, and I went through a very sad phase when I must have been almost 14 where I realized I was a grown-up and I should probably give away all of my Star Wars action figures to somebody younger than me. Mm. I have very few regrets in life, but that I still count.
Let's see. You said Star Wars action figures. Let me see.
Oh boy.
This badass.
Ow.
Okay, my daughter put the hat on him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who? I was gonna say, did your daughter knit that cap for Darth Maul?
Yes.
Wow.
This is the 12-inch, by the way. I don't know if.
Oh,
you can
trust
see
me. That was the. Oh, I can see. yeah. You know, that's funny because the 12-inch Star Wars action figures when I was growing up were always those ones that I wished that I had. That, you know, like I had certain friends who had the 12-inch ones, and I only had the tiny ones.
Do you want to confirm that? Never mind. Go ahead.
Okay.
Right.
I can neither confirm nor deny.
I thought it was 12 inches. I gave them away. And I realized that I gave them away to a younger person who didn't care as much about them as I did. And I've always, I couldn't take them back. You know, he probably got rid of them. I don't know.
He probably lit them on fire and drowned them in the bathtub and did all the things that we do to.
Yeah. Lord knows when I was sick of action figures, and sometimes even before I was, I did horrible, horrible things to them.
Like the boy next door on Toy Story, right?
Exactly.
Yes,
exactly.
Very much.
Yeah.
And so, Tara, I mean, no action figures in your history?
Yeah. And no. I mean, like, I was, as far as toys growing up, like, I was a big Lego girl. Like, I had buckets of Legos, and I would just build and build and build. And I also had, it was all about building, because I had Legos. I had Lincoln Logs. I had
Tinker Toys.
It was all about, like, yeah, I should have become an architect, really, is what there was a missed opportunity there.
But we should have gotten together then, because then my action figures would have had somewhere to live.
Yeah, well, I would have built like an entire city and they would have lived in the city. Then you wouldn't have been able to play with them, because I would have put them in the houses and they would have been stuck there.
Yeah.
See, and I was somewhere between the two of you. See, I had the piles of Legos and the Tinker Toys and the Lincoln Logs, and would build the whole cities. But they were filled out by the Hot Wheels and the Hot Wheels track, right? But
I didn't have Hot Wheels.
Oh,
okay. Yeah.
And then the walls were filled with comic books. I just didn't have – I didn't know about action figures till I was a grown-up, believe it or not. I never really paid any attention to that.
Yeah. They're toys that we were allowed to play with too. And I think it was – you know, now that I realize that it was fan fiction before the internet – because I would take those action figures and play out all the stories that I wished that they would do in comic books and on TV and in film that I never got to see. So, wow, it's the birth of fan fiction.
Well, there you go. And to give you guys full credibility, in case people can't quite see it with the video, Yuri has got a Grand Theft TARDIS shirt on for Doctor Who.
And, I do.
Drinking from a TARDIS cup, right? Mug?
Yeah, it's a mug. You can sort of, because it's old, you can still see the faint remnants. Is when you put hot water in it, the TARDIS disappears from what I assume is London.
And reappears.
And reappears in space.
Ooh.
Yep. Yeah.
Yes.
And Tara, what are you drinking from?
I'm drinking from a 10-10 mug.
Ah.
Yes.
The Captain Haddock.
Captain Haddock. It shows our various shades of nerd.
Right.
And I wasn't sure if it was from Tin. I guessed it was either 10-10, but I also thought it might have been Bluto from Popeye.
Bluto.
Which yeah. very much could have been. But
I mean, they were created around the same time, so you know. So what was the inspiration for Shelf Life? Was it just you guys sitting around talking about action figures all day, or how did that come about?
It's funny because it should have come from my twisted brain and actually started there. I was the one who collected action figures and knew all about that world. But Tara's really good. She's the idea woman, and she we were looking for the types of shows that, because we wanted to produce something. We were looking for the types of shows that we might be able to produce on a very small budget and maintain. And Tara, you know, came to me with this idea one day about four action figures on a shelf. And the way it was conceived, it was going to be really simple. You know, we all stand on get four people, stand on a board, you know, set up the camera, aim the camera, run around, you know, hit record and then run around in front, and we'd play out just in a wide shot.
One take, sort of.
Yeah. Yeah. All the way through. Whatever.
Clearly that's not what happened, but
right. That was the birth of that.
It was because we were in, like Yuri was saying, we were in pre-production on a completely different web series, and that web series was going to have a lot of sets and costumes and locations and making it a larger kind of world. And I still love that idea. I really would love to pursue that at some point, because we have 13 episodes written. It's ready to go. But we were sort of having a production meeting one day, and I was thinking to myself, I just wish we could do something easy. Well, clearly that's not what we did.
Right.
In the moment of the inception of the idea, it was this, it would be so easy. All we have to do is just stand there.
Right. And if you've seen any of the recent episodes, it's gone from from simple to extremely complicated.
And it never was us just standing there. I mean, even in the first, when we were doing mostly one takes, it was still choreographed and we had a location.
We had a real director.
Higher production values.
Well, and the episodes have gotten longer, too. I mean, from like a minute to 4 minutes plus, right?
Yeah. We always, from the very beginning, one of the things we wanted to do was not beat a joke to death. We would rather operate on the robot chicken model, which is, you know, if a gag is good, is only funny for about 3 seconds, cut after 3 seconds. We didn't want to, you know, Saturday Night Live it. As fond as the memories are I have for Saturday Night Live, they have a tendency to beat a joke to death. Mm-hmm. We wanted for that never to happen on the show. So if the show, you know, wanted to be a minute long, it'd be a minute. But if it needed 3.5 minutes to you know, get to that, then we'd let it be 3.5 minutes. And you're right, even this, in the fourth season, we've allowed ourselves even a little more time, but we still feel it's important that it doesn't get, you know, long, that people aren't, you know, waiting for the show to be over. I'd much rather leave people with, oh, wait, I was just getting into it, than, when is this going to be over? Or because it's the internet, you know, and it's free, you can just click to something else.
But that's the other thing, too, is now that we've gotten into the fourth season and we know the characters better and we know the world better, and thanks to our very successful Indiegogo crowdfunding campaign that we did for season four, we have the resources and the time and the character development that we have to sort of expand the world a little bit, and that means longer episodes because there's more information we're trying to convey. We still have the remnants of the original, which is like the get in, the get out, the jokes, but we're also doing a little more character development. So there ends up being a lot more locations and smaller storylines. And now actually for season four, what we're very proud about is, much like a regular television sitcom, there's like, and technically it's like A line and B storyline, but there's levels of story that are developing for an entire season rather than it being sort of a one-off episode. And you can still come in and just watch an episode, and you don't have to have watched the episodes around it, hopefully, to get what's going on.
Right.
But we're excited to now be able to flesh out the world a little so that you can, if you have watched all of the show, but even if you start with season four and watch, you're going to get a bigger payoff at the end because you're going to have seen all the storylines developing toward something.
So how many episodes in a season?
We started with the idea that there would be 10 episodes a season based on, that was sort of what we could shoot over the course of a weekend. And even then, getting 10 episodes in, you know, in a weekend was tight.
Yeah.
This last season, because we were growing the show and, you know, finding more of the world, exploring the world, what would normally take 2 to maybe 3 days to shoot a season, we shot 12 episodes over the course of about 8 or 9 shooting days. Mm-hmm. So it really, it took more.
But we also, I mean, we rented a sound stage and we had like, it was a much bigger production.
Yeah, we built other sets. We had a real, you know, production design team and, you know, art director and all these things that we weren't used to having on the show. Got treated like an honest to God TV show this time,
yeah.
With all the accompanying stress of producing a real live TV show. but so far, I mean, it's paying off. Watching it come together, you know, watching all that stuff actually come through has been hugely rewarding.
Yeah.
And how long did it take you guys to write this season of 12 episodes?
Because he does the writing. Idea girl.
Right. We took some time. I came up with a bunch of different ideas that I felt might be good for the season. And then we had a meeting. You know, I had them all on index cards. And we had a meeting. It was myself and Tara and the two directors for this season, Travis Stevens and Stephen Calcote. And we went through all the ideas and sort of picked based on, you know, what we thought would be a great sort of storyline for each of the characters as well as for the whole season. And by the fourth season, we had learned a lot more about those characters. So what was it about these characters that we really loved and would love to explore? What wouldn't be just a one-off joke anymore? What could work with these characters? And based on that, we came down to about 12 episodes. And then we have this is the second season that we've had guest writers in. So while I acted as story editor and wrote about half the episodes this season, we had other writers, some of whom have written huge Hollywood movies and very successful TV shows, because they wanted to come and play in the world as well, which was also hugely rewarding for us. So writing wise. The episodes, while we had the cores of each of the stories and we could sort of begin working on what we would have to get together production-wise, the scripts themselves came together over the course of probably a month in writing and whittling down.
And is this profitable to do, or do you do something like this for a different reason?
I would love to say that it is profitable. And we did, to be sure, we were able to raise money to produce the season. But as of yet, it has yet to be profitable for us. And I know that's big on the web, how to monetize the things that you're making. But your audience, your general audience for the web is used to seeing things for free. So it takes a really bold move to start charging right off the bat.
And a lot of the shows that do end up monetizing mm-hmm. are monetizing from like areas around it, so they sell T-shirts or
merchandise,
or things like that.
Ad revenue
then continues to feed mm-hmm. into it, or they end up getting sponsorship, which we haven't done. Mm-hmm. I mean, our goal is still to try to be able to appear on, I don't know, like Adult Swim, Comedy Central. That would be a great mm-hmm. thing to be mm-hmm. able to just be sort of like a little interstitial, because right. I think. Quality-wise, I think it's up to par with
Absolutely.
Things that are on there, and I sort of mm-hmm. view it as sort of the children's hospital of action figures. You know, sort of
right.
there's
right.
sort of quality to it, but we just haven't gotten in the right doors, or it mm-hmm. hasn't quite worked out yet.
And we have placed ads, but because we're not getting the you know millions of hits per episode. You know, $23. You know, I think was our last payout for you know over the course of several. Which unfortunately not pay the bills on this show, but one of the exciting things about that is that there is so much love that goes into the production of this show. Yeah, I wish you could see it. You know, I wish you could be on set to see, you know, the talent that comes to the show, and you know, blood, sweat, and tears, and you know, 14-hour days to make a show that they're not getting paid for. And these are all people who get, these are all professionals who get paid to do what they do, and they love the show.
Yeah.
And it's hugely humbling that, you know, that these many people assemble to create this show because they love the world.
Action figures assemble.
Right.
Well, I think season 5 should really have an episode where it's like MASH used to do those documentaries within the show. And you should have like a third-rate journalist character, like, I don't know, Mr. Media, show up to interview each of the characters and talk about privately what they think of the other characters.
Just want your own action figure, don't you?
Yeah. And that's ultimately what you guys need, I'm sure, is that you need enough following so you can have action figures of, you know, Hero Man and Hero Lass and Bug Boy and Samurai Snake and Black Velvet.
We did do a small run of the four main action figures as part of our Indiegogo campaign to try to, you know,
incentive perks.
Mm-hmm. But now people are like, when are you going to do a real run? And I was like, well, it is a real run. It's just a small run.
Right, there's very many of them. I love that idea, though. And I'm not at all going to give you credit when we do it in season. but you could, and, you know, I mean, of course, now it's immortalized and, you know, I can't.
It is.
Man's copyright, right?
The show is copyright. Lawyers, take note. Let me just make a note to myself, to my future self, to investigate copyright violation. I ask about if it's profitable because, I mean, Mr. Media, this is the seventh year of Mr. Media podcast, and the reality is it's not making, like, money. It's more, right. It's a great opportunity to interact with other people in the media, of other opportunities, and, you know, before all this existed, you couldn't have met people the same way. True. I mean, I kind of assume that it might have that type of use for you guys as well, introduce you to people in the industry, give you a profile that you don't otherwise have.
Yeah.
Well, it's certainly given us practice on, running a real show from soup to nuts, and it has been exciting that in especially this most recent season and sort of leading up to this, we do get interest from other people who want to be a part of it, you know, our peers and people who, you know, we've been fans of, you know, coming to us and saying, hey, when do I get to be on Shelf Life? Wouldn't have thought that you would want to be on our little show, but right. Why are you in?
It's the little engine that could.
Yeah. And so you'll see in this season that we get some great guest stars, and it's hugely exciting.
You know, have you guys ever talked to Chris Hardwick about his Nerdist Network? It seems like you'd be a great fit for them.
Yeah, we know Chris, and we've talked to several people over at the network. I always hate to when you know somebody personally. I always feel weird about trying to do business deals with those people. Sometimes we have talked to some people over at Nerdist, and I don't know. You know, we'll see. With this new season and sort of how it's grown, I've wanted to, because I took the show around once before, in its more nascent stages. And
thanks. Good vote.
Oh, good. Yeah,
that was good. I was thinking the same thing, Tara. I just didn't want to say it.
Thank you. But now that it's sort of become as big as it's become, and I mean that in sort of the way we've explored the world in season four.
We're 12-inch figures now.
Yeah, right. Exactly. We've gone from 4 to 12-inch.
I'm sorry, could you do that again and hold your finger up a little higher so everybody could see the difference between 4 and 12 inches? never mind.
but I'm so proud of it that I want to, and because it's really becoming a different show in a great way, I want to take it out again and go, look, see, it's even better. You guys jump on the train before you miss, before it leaves the station. But we'll see, because like Tara said, we really feel that it would go well on a show like, Adult Swim or, a network like Adult Swim or, that type of, it's not for everyone.
And clearly we curse and we have, racist jokes and it's kind of off color and we're irreverent, but I think that's part of the fun of it.
And that's certainly kept some of the sponsors away, but I think there's a place for it.
Yeah. And I think that's sort of akin to how sci-fi is able to laugh at current situations politically and religiously and whatnot because it's sci-fi. And suddenly on Battlestar, you can have these whole scenarios playing out that are comparative to maybe perhaps what's happening in the current climate.
And by sci-fi, she doesn't mean that the sci-fi network science fiction
but,
in general.
Yeah, but I just mean that, like, because that can do that, I think our show in the same sort of way. And I think much with comedy, you have that sort of leeway to sort of poke fun at everything. And so we try to be equal opportunity. We even have a line, we're equal opportunity racist. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's this idea of we're trying to poke fun at everything and everyone. So we're not antagonizing any one particular area or sect.
Which is, I guess, sort of the South Park rule. Mm-hmm. You know, as long as you're making fun of everybody and nobody's safe, including yourself, then you're okay.
Well, yeah. I had written down in my notes, there was a great line that Black Velvet says. He says, Hero Man is trying to talk black to Black Velvet. Black Velvet gets disgusted with him and says, bet this never happens to Luke Cage or Static Shock. I just thought that was great. That was just great.
And we love Phil. So, you know, Black Velvet is one of my favorite characters, too. We'll let Tara take it for a second. I'm gonna go. We did some.
Do you want me to grab them?
Do you want to grab them? We did some for an event recently. We put together some trading cards.
Oh, cool.
For the four mains, and we couldn't leave Black Velvet out because Black Velvet's become sort of a member of the crew.
Yeah.
He's been out so many times that he's a member of the family. And so this is, let's see. Let's see how well we can show this. That's the Black Velvet trading card.
That's awesome.
Got
all of his personal information, his stats.
All right, that's going to be the thing that we're going to do this year.
Hold them up one more time. Let me. Yuri is holding up Samurai Snake and Hero Man, and then Tara has Hero Lass and Bug Boy. Look at that.
We've got all sorts of fun info and stats as well as their picture. So I was very proud of these. And Erica Tariquez, who has been amazingly helpful on the show, actually designed these.
That's great. Yeah. You should be giving those out as packs at Comic-Con this year.
It's our plan. In fact, I just was looking at printers yesterday, so that's why we're doing those.
Very, very cool. Very, very cool. So I was just looking at time. I don't want to run out of time with you guys, but could each of you tell us a little bit about your character and how Tara, in your case, she is or isn't like you, and the same thing, Yuri, how he, Bug Boy, is or isn't like you?
Well, I play Hero Lass, and Hero Lass is a girl among boys. Almost said among men. You can tell, but I was like, they're not men. But the fun thing about her is that she sort of gets to be the token woman in the sense that she's everyone's mother, she's everyone's sister, she's everyone's girlfriend. Like she ends up getting to take on the woman role to all of them in her own way. Mm. And what's fun about where she is now in season 4 is she's really starting to find herself rather than being everything. She's getting to sort of hone in on who that is. And the way that she is similar to me is I think that I also tend to like hanging out with the guys and playing, but I also tend to be feminine. I'm definitely a girl. There's no questioning that I'm one of the guys because I'm definitely a girly girl. But within that, I think Hero Lass is a little more acerbic than I am. She's a little more willing to play with fire, whereas, you know, I wouldn't ever really want to actually hurt anyone's feelings. Hero Lass doesn't mind. But she's really fun to play and to get into. Mm-hmm. And I very much enjoy, you know, putting Hero Lass on and getting to sort of bat one with the boys.
Mm-hmm. And I love that because I've always described Bug Boy as the snarky one of the four, which would be sort of like a Jeff Winger. You know, I mean, he'd be like the Winger character. But now that you say it, like, you know, Danny Pudi's killer, like Abed, or Abed, he's I think you've hit it more than, you know, more accurately than I did before. And I really like your comparison. There's something about as far as, you know, things that are like me and Bug Boy. I mean, Bug Boy is definitely more, much like what Tara said she liked about Hero Lass, he's much more witty in person. You know, Bug Boy is the kind of guy who thinks of the funny line right at the moment, as opposed to 5 minutes later after the situation has passed, like with me. Mm. You know, Abed always comes up with the really interesting, appraisal of what's going on, or, you know, some weird, you know, connection to something you never would have thought of. Bug Boy's got that going for me. I always wish that I was as clever at, you know, in the moment as Bug Boy. But I think we both struggle with the idea in a way that we wish we had superpowers. I mean, we all wish that.
Some more than others.
I have spent life wishing that. But Bug Boy, the character, his superpowers that he can change into all these bugs. But of course, those are all other action figures. So he doesn't actually have anything. He's just a guy.
He's
an impotent action figure. Speaking of 12 inches.
Well, and there's that great moment where he discovers a dildo and is running around the set. Well, the set as such as it is, holding it overhead, saying it's a rocket. And I have this written down. And Hero Last just looks at it longingly and says, "Now that's a gift that keeps on giving."
Yep.
Yeah. Before we run out of time, let me ask you this: do you think you'll ever collect all the episodes like on a DVD so people can watch them?
Well, actually,
here we go again. Actually, Bob, we've already done that. Where have you been?
1 through 3 are on DVD, and they have bonus. There's bonus content on that DVD.
Yeah, behind the scenes content, featurettes, and things like that.
So it's a really nice packed DVD, and so that's actually available now. If you go to the website, you'll see what's left of the action figures, the limited run collectibles, mm-hmm. and the DVD are all on the website.
Yeah,
and
both of those things we created for the Indiegogo campaign as perks, but then decided to make them available because we still have some now. So the DVD and action figures, mm-hmm. and then
I was just gonna say we're gonna wait because there's so much content in season 4. What we'll hopefully be able to do is once we get through season 4 and then season 5, we'll combine those and we'll stick that on a DVD, and then that will also be a DVD mm-hmm. with bonus content. And
right, because the episodes are so short, it seems silly to do a season at a time.
Yeah,
but I foresee a season 4 or 5 DVD.
Yeah.
In the near.
Very good. Well, and we'll see what we can do to make it available for Mr. Media. Certainly a link to it, if nothing more. So, folks, listen, you can find the latest webisodes of Shelf Life, created by my guests, looking at them here, Yuri Lowenthal and the lovely Tara Platt. Yuri, not so lovely to me, but maybe you like him. I don't know.
Well, that's true.
Yeah.
He's got the Doctor Who taste. So you can catch all that on YouTube at youtube.com/ShelfLifeTheSeries or at their website, which is ShelfLifeSeries.com.
Nailed it.
They're both on Twitter individually. Now, do any of the characters have their own Twitter accounts as the characters?
They do, and we were much better during the first season or two actually tweeting from them, but then it just got a little overwhelming because the season is so much bigger. I mean, literally, we were at an audio mix session last night till midnight and past.
Yeah.
We're just running out of time, and we're only a few people. So okay. we have Twitter handles for all the characters. So it would be like at Hero Man SL, at Hero Lass SL, at Samurai Snake SL. So hence the SL is Shelf Life. But so we have the Twitter handles, but we haven't been very active about tweeting from them lately, but I do try to keep up tweets from Shelf Life Series on Twitter. Mm-hmm.
And the Facebook, our Shelf Life Series Facebook page is pretty well updated.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, we'll have links to all that stuff on the Mr. Media page with the interview, so people can just follow.
Easy.
And Tara also is on Pinterest and Facebook and YouTube channels. It's all over the place, so easy enough to find. Yuri, Tara, thank you so much. It's been a lot of fun to discover the series, and you guys are delightful to talk to. Thanks so much for being on Mr. Media today.
Absolutely.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. You can see and hear almost 1,000 Mr. Media interviews by visiting our main site, MrMedia.com, MrMedia.com. Or check out the more than 200 video interviews on the Mr. Media Radio site on YouTube. And I'd sure appreciate if you'd show some love for Mr. Media's advertisers, including Stitcher. Apple named Stitcher a top 5 news app of 2011. It's a free mobile app for your smartphone or tablet that lets you listen to your favorite shows and discover the best of news, entertainment, and sports on demand. You can listen whenever you want to more than 5,000 shows, get customized recommendations, and discover what your friends are listening to. My own list of Stitcher favorites is pretty eclectic. I start my day with an hour of MSNBC's Morning Joe with Joe Scarborough and Mika Brzezinski. Then it's the latest two-minute update from the Onion News Network. After that, I'll listen to WTF with Mark Maron, Here's the Thing with Alec Baldwin, HBO's Real Time with Bill Maher, and excerpts from E's Chelsea Lately and The Soup with Joel McHale. Also in regular rotation on my Stitcher playlist, The BS Report with ESPN's Bill Simmons, the TechCrunch headlines, and The Don Geronimo Show. The latest episodes of each show, whether originating from broadcasts, cable TV, radio syndication, or podcasts, are continuously updated. Stitcher is a free app for your iPhone, iPad, Kindle, Fire, BlackBerry, Droid, and more. And show your support of Mr. Media by getting, did I mention it's free? The app at stitcher.com/Mr. Media. That's stitcher.com/MR Media. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. We're also supported by Audible. Check out Audible's 30-day trial membership and download the audiobook version of the book everyone's been talking about, 50 Shades of Grey by E.L. James. Sign up for your free trial today at audible.com/radio. Again, audibletrial.com/radio. And finally, if you need a disc jockey for a wedding, bar mitzvah, corporate event, or just a big old party, please consider calling 1-800-DIAL-DJS, the party authority, for all your party entertainment needs. You can call 1-800-DIAL-DJS or go to their website, 1-800-DIAL-DJS.com, and tell them Mr. Media sent you. And thanks for listening. Today's episode of Mr. Media Interviews is brought to you by GoDaddy.com. You know GoDaddy.com from their wild and sexy commercials, but isn't it time you actually test drove their web hosting and domain registration services yourself? For a limited time, Mr. Media listeners can save 10% on the already low price of web hosting services at GoDaddy.com by entering the promo code POD4 at checkout. Again, that's 10% off web hosting when you go to GoDaddy.com and enter the promo code POD4, that's P-O-D, the number 4, at checkout.